It's been quite some time since I've spoken about Zimbabwe on this program, but it's never been far from my thoughts. You may remember a power-sharing agreement was signed there between the ruling ZANU-PF party, headed by Robert Mugabe, and the former opposition MDC, headed by Morgan Tsvangirai, in February 2009. That moment was meant to be a dawn of renewal and rebirth for a country that was ravaged by political violence and repression, poverty, AIDS, economic failure and unemployment. The new unity government was especially designed to resolve Zimbabwe's political and economic crisis and chart a new political direction for the country. But just over 1 year on, that reform is being described as a failure, and although it is pretty much out of the news headlines, the predicament of the people of Zimbabwe continues to be dire.
As you may know, the global political agreement that was signed between ZANU-PF and the MDC contains specific measures to promote freedom of speech, the rule of law, and end politically motivated violence, and basically to end impunity for violations that had taken place previously.
Tiseke Kazambala is a senior researcher in the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch.
Our view is that the human rights situation in Zimbabwe has not changed significantly. In fact, we're still seeing state agents affiliated with ZANU-PF continuing to harass and beat up MDC activists in some of the rural areas. So we saw that Zimbabwe's oppressive media laws have not changed at all, and there has been no meaningful progress at all in instituting promised human rights reforms or in demonstrating respect for the rule of law. So none of the things that were agreed upon in the global political agreement have actually taken place.
It's been really depressing this year, actually. There was so much hope pinned on the power-sharing government, which was really pushed through and agreed upon by Tsvangirai because he really had no other option. But it's really like looking at an old canvas, as you were saying, so many of the abuses continuing. What about the media issue? Not a single license for independent media outlets has been issued since the power-sharing government was formed. How is that possible?
That is just a clear example of what we mean when we say that things have not really changed at all in Zimbabwe. The independent press in Zimbabwe is still under threat. And since the daily newspaper, the Daily News, was shut down many years ago, about 8 years ago now, that paper has not been allowed to come back. And in fact, the government has refused to issue licenses to other daily papers that wanted to kind of start operating in the country. That is highly problematic. And as I said, the repressive media laws remain in place, and there are still no daily private newspapers, and there are no privately owned radio stations. So public information right now remains under the firm control of ZANU-PF.
And not only that, I think that the government owns print and electronic media and uses it to manipulate public opinion in its favour as well, doesn't it?
Exactly, and this is a tactic that has continued to happen since this political crisis began around 1999-2000. The government has always manipulated public opinion in its favor in the state-owned print and electronic media, and it has constantly used hate speech and offensive language against the MDC or the Movement for Democratic Change. So there is no open media environment in Zimbabwe, and Zimbabweans are not able to fully participate in the ongoing constitutional reform process or in future elections, because the information out there is being controlled by ZANU-PF.
Yes, just recently there has been news of Zimbabwean journalists fleeing to safety after receiving death threats from senior police officers, and of others who have been arrested and detained after filming public demonstrations before being released without charge. However, in my readings and research during the past year, I have been relieved to learn that after 12 years of shrinking, Zimbabwe's economy grew about 4% in 2009, and galloping inflation seems to have been reined in.
Now, I know that economically the situation seems to have improved somewhat. Even for the people, there is food on the shelves in the supermarkets today.
First of all, let me just say that, yes, the economy has indeed improved, but one must also remember that Zimbabwe has a 90% unemployment rate. So while there's food in the stores, it does not mean that the average Zimbabwean can actually afford to buy food. In addition to that, civil servants recently went on strike because they're not being paid well. So even economically, there's still a long way to go in Zimbabwe.
With the people in such desperate condition, and with basic infrastructures such as health and education in dire straits, where does ZANU-PF get the money to fund its repressive machinery?
And as for ZANU-PF, what we have seen is that there are two parallel economies actually running in Zimbabwe. You have the economy which is being run by the finance minister, Tendai Biti, who is from the MDC, and then you have the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, which is being run by Gideon Gono, who is a ZANU-PF apologist. And so there are two parallel economies. Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF, is turning towards the east, has received money from China, while the MDC continues to try to raise funds from international donors and Western donors. That is also in itself problematic.
Do you think Morgan Tsvangirai has a responsibility in how things are going?
Well, yes. He is a part of this unity government. And as part of the unity government, he has a responsibility to ensure that human rights reforms and other such issues are taken care of. Unfortunately for him, he signed on to a global political agreement with a party that wants to retain full control of the repressive institutions, such as the police services and the security services. So while we say that Morgan Tsvangirai does indeed have a responsibility, we must not forget that the onus is on ZANU-PF, because ZANU-PF is the obstacle to the global political agreement being implemented to the fullest degree.
Human Rights Watch is calling on the government to allow newspapers and other media to operate freely, and also to repeal all repressive legislation, such as the Public Order and Security Act. What is that act?
Well, the Public Order and Security Act is a very onerous piece of legislation. I mean, amongst other things, it requires that not more than 5 people congregate in a public place. If there's more than 5 of you congregating in the public place, the police have the right to arrest you and charge you for attempting to engage in public disorder. So it has all these types of very onerous articles within it that give the police leeway to arbitrarily arrest anyone who they perceive to be acting against public order. Basically, it's an attempt to restrict the work of the opposition and to restrict the work of human rights activists so that they cannot meet and protest against ZANU-PF's repressive actions.
Let's just remember that commercial farms continue to be taken over by groups of war veterans, and that all government opponents continue to be arrested if they meet in any kind of political rally. And again, the media is totally repressed. What is Human Rights calling on to happen now?
Well, we would like to see a return to the rule of law in Zimbabwe. As you said, the fact that the farms continue to be invaded means that the rule of law is constantly being flouted in Zimbabwe. We would also like to see a return to an independent judicial system. Right now, ZANU-PF still has a ZANU-PF apologist in place as Attorney General, and we would like to see that Attorney General Tomana, who is highly compromised, be removed from his position as the Attorney General in the country. So there's a number of things we'd like to see: return to the rule of law, respect for human rights and for democracy.
News today says that the EU has renewed sanctions on Zimbabwe for another 12 months, saying that the unity government hasn't made enough progress. What is your stance on this?
That is a very positive stance from the EU. This is what we would have liked to see. An EU delegation visited Zimbabwe in September last year, and they too found that the inclusive government had failed to meet the benchmarks that the EU itself had established for resuming development cooperation with the country and lifting targeted travel and financial restrictions on senior ZANU-PF members. It is these findings that have probably driven the EU's decision to renew the sanctions for another year.
Tshisekedi, finally, Zimbabwe has really dropped from the news in this past year. How important is it that it be kept in media attention?
It is very important, because what we have seen, as I've highlighted time and again, is the fact that ZANU-PF retains full control of the day-to-day runnings of government and retains full control of what we believe are the institutions of repression, the security forces, the army, who have committed abuses in the past. And it is highly likely that in the run-up to any other election that may come up, ZANU-PF will then open up the taps of violence and use the security forces to once more harass and beat up people in the rural areas of Zimbabwe to prevent them from electing who they freely want to lead their country. So Zimbabwe must not fall off the media agenda, because the potential for violence to erupt again is very high.
So let's not forget Zimbabwe and its people. I don't know about you, but I would certainly join my voice in an appeal to the government to begin preparations for holding internationally supervised, free, fair, and credible elections. Elections that will lead to a legitimate and democratic government with the political will to bring about true change.